Universal Times. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. We begin with breaking news in the United States, where various media outlets are reporting that at least four transit officers were shot in Dallas, Texas Thursday night during a protest over the police-related shooting deaths of two African-American men this week. One of the transit officers was killed, according to the reports. Police are on the scene at this hour. We'll bring you the very latest as the story continues to unfold. The shooting of Alton Sterling in Louisiana and Philando Castile of Minnesota has sparked protests in several U.S. cities Thursday. The deadly shooting is raising questions about excessive police force, especially against minorities. U.S. President Barack Obama is urging American law enforcement to eliminate racial bias from its ranks.
When people say black lives matter, that doesn't mean blue lives don't matter. It just means all lives matter. But right now, the big concern is the fact that the data shows black folks are more vulnerable to these kinds of incidents.
State and federal investigations are underway into both shootings. The officers involved are on administrative leave. Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump met behind closed doors Thursday with House and Senate Republicans. House Speaker Paul Ryan called it an opportunity for members to gain information about Trump's campaign, and some of the attendees expressed enthusiasm for the candidate. But dozens of Republicans shunned the get-together, and others refused to endorse Trump. The encounter on Capitol Hill came less than 2 weeks before the Republican National Convention. This is VOA News. The U.S. State Department is reopening an internal investigation into whether Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and her top aides mishandled classified information when she was Secretary of State. The move comes a day after Attorney General Loretta Lynch agreed with the FBI recommendation that no criminal charges should be filed in relation to the incident. FBI Director James Comey told a congressional panel Thursday that investigators found no evidence that Clinton or her aides intended to break the law. Comey added mishandling of classified information can have consequences.
I didn't say there's no consequence for someone who violates the rules regarding the handling of classified information. There are often very severe consequences in the FBI involving their employment, involving their pay, involving their clearances. That's what I said on Tuesday, and I hope folks walk away understanding that just because someone's not prosecuted for mishandling classified information, that doesn't mean if you work in the FBI, there aren't consequences.
The investigators found just over 100 classified documents in the more than 30,000 Clinton emails they reviewed while she was the country's top diplomat. More than two dozen people were killed Thursday in an attack on a Shiite shrine north of the Iraqi city of Baghdad. Gunmen and suicide bombers attacked Sayyid Muhammad's shrine, apparently targeting families gathered to celebrate the Muslim observance of Eid al-Fitr. Senior Australian Minister Christopher Pyne is claiming an electoral victory for his Liberal Party-led coalition. Pyne said Friday the government has won 74 seats in the House of Representatives and is likely to win three more. That would give it more than the 76 needed to form a government. But vote counting in Australia's election is still going on, and official results could be days away. The opposition has not conceded defeat, and there has been no victory statement from Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. Poland's parliament has approved an amended version of controversial changes to the nation's constitutional court. Opposition members and many Western allies have expressed alarm over the proposed changes, believing they compromise the government's system of democratic checks and balances and the rule of law. The issue is expected to come up at the NATO summit, which begins Friday. It is also expected to be one of the topics President Barack Obama will discuss with his Polish counterpart at the summit. North Korea said Thursday the most recent U.S. sanctions imposed on its leader, Kim Jong-un, amounted to a declaration of war, vowing to take strong retaliatory measures. On Wednesday, the U.S. blacklisted Kim, along with 10 other people and five government ministries and departments, for the first time over human rights abuses. It is the first response to the U.S. action. Pyongyang urged Washington to withdraw the sanctions immediately. For these stories and more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, in for James Bhatti. Today is Friday, July the 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. A new human rights report says that Burundian intelligence services tortured scores of suspected government opponents at their headquarters and in secret locations. Meanwhile, Burundian political stakeholders are being argued to attend the upcoming consultations in Arusha.
That their primary interest is to return to the foundations of Arusha and the Constitution. They don't want to go back to the kind of civil war and ethnic violence that they've seen in the past. And we believe that this dialogue under President Mkapa is the way to get back to those foundations.
Thomas Perriello is the U.S. Special Envoy to the Great Lakes region of Africa. And the leader of the opposition Zambians for Empowerment and Development, Z-Party, has endorsed incumbent President Edgar Lungu from the ruling Patriotic Front, PF Party, for the August 11th presidential elections. And the UN warns that political tensions in the DRC are rising ahead of anticipated presidential and legislative elections.
Polarization and public discontent are fueled by delays in the electoral process, a debate around the respect for the Constitution, and increasing restrictions on democratic space.
UN Deputy Secretary General Jan Eliasson. Those stories, plus Mark Ouma's sports, are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. Special Envoy to the Great Lakes of Africa, Thomas Perriello, says that Burundi's political consultations are more than urgent given the precarious economic and security situations in Burundi. Speaking to VOA Central Africa Service reporter Frederick Mundichize, Mr. Perriello urged all Burundian stakeholders to see to it that they attend the upcoming consultations.
We are actually very determined to find a way to make this round of consultations happen, ideally in Arusha on the 12th, under the leadership of former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa. The East African community has made very clear at the head of state level that these talks are a priority and that they expect both sides, the opposition and the government, to show up in good faith. And we believe this is urgent. The situation on the ground is very fragile economically as well as security-wise, and that the only credible way forward is a negotiated solution under the auspices of the East African community.
But according to the office of the facilitator, the talks are not going to happen on the 12th as planned. You know the reason why?
We know there have been concerns raised by both sides. The opposition has made very clear that they expect to be seated as a united opposition under the auspices of SENARA, the opposition coalition, and they have presented in multiple forums the importance of that being seated in a unified fashion. We know that President Mkapa has been working with them on whether there is some way to proceed, and we are looking for all sorts of creativity and urgency in how this can be solved, because we think it's so important to get everyone together, even if that ends up being shuttle diplomacy rather than everyone at a single table. The government has raised concerns about the location in Arusha. We actually think the location doesn't matter as long as it's a safe space, though certainly reinforcing the importance of the Arusha Accords that ended so many years and even decades of a cycle of violence in the country is a good reminder of the stakes that are at play here for civilians across Burundi.
Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa met with SENARED, the opposition alliance, in Brussels a few weeks ago, and they impressed upon him that they are the viable opposition group to be able to negotiate with the government of Burundi. Still, when the office of the facilitator issued the invitations, SENARED never got the invitation as a group. Do you think this is going to be to have an impact on the consultations?
Well, you know, there were some mistakes made in the last round, and I think President Mkapa deserves a lot of credit for taking those challenges head on. I think he's been very clear, both in his statements and in his actions, that he is willing to meet with all sides and is looking to be very inclusive in this attempt to find an end to the crisis in Burundi. SENARED has raised some very serious concerns about being seated in a unified fashion. President Museveni, as moderator during the Entebbe round, talked about the importance of everyone being at the table. And we are certainly hoping for a relatively rapid dialogue and conclusion, and then limiting the number of actors at the beginning seems to make sense to that. But we're going to defer to the facilitator and his team on the right way to proceed and encourage all sides to participate.
Analysts or experts in the Constitution, depending on which side they are on, they have like two different interpretations of the Burundi Constitution. The Burundi government claims that Nkurunziza had the right to run for a third term, whereas the opposition says the opposite. Has U.S. been able to have like experts look into the Constitution and find out what the reality is?
Well, not only did pretty much all of the constitutional experts agree that the third mandate was not constitutional, you saw President Nkurunziza himself go to his parliament to try to change the Constitution to allow a third term. And only when he lost that vote, including members of his own party who refused to allow this change to the Constitution, did they then introduce this reimagining or reinterpretation of a constitution. So it's pretty rare that a president would try to change a constitution that didn't require that change in the first place. You know, that was a crucial moment, and I think what we see in that's hopeful is that many of the core leadership of the CNDD-FDD, that was the ruling party, put its commitment to the Constitution and to the long-term stability of Burundi ahead of whatever partisan interests that they had. And we continue to see among many of the political stakeholders, but also the civilian population, that their primary interest is to return to the foundations of Arusha and the Constitution. They don't want to go back to the kind of civil war and ethnic violence that they've seen in the past. And we believe that this dialogue under President Mkapa is the way to get back to those foundations, and it appears that the heads of state across the East African community are deeply committed to that path. We hope the leaders on all sides will meet that same standard.
Thomas Perriello is the U.S. Special Envoy to the Great Lakes of Africa. Meanwhile, a new human rights report says that Burundian intelligence services tortured scores of suspected government opponents at their headquarters and in secret locations. The report also says that Burundi police and members of the ruling party's youth league, the Imbonerakure, committed serious abuses, often in collaboration with the intelligence services. It says that agents of Burundi's National Intelligence Service, Service National de Renseignement, SNR, have increasingly been responsible for torturing alleged opposition sympathizers taken into custody. Human Rights Watch also says that Burundi's police beat detainees with hammers and steel construction bars, among other torture methods. Special Representative Perriello said of the report that the U.S. government has condemned human rights violations committed by both sides, but insisted the Burundian government must do more to prosecute security officers and its allies who are alleged to have been involved in human rights violations. The United Nations is warning that without a serious national political dialogue, the Democratic Republic of Congo's current political tensions could deteriorate into severe and possibly violent crisis. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
UN Deputy Secretary General Jan Eliasson warned Thursday that political tensions are rising ahead of anticipated presidential and legislative elections in the DRC.
Polarization and public discontent are fueled by delays in the electoral process, a debate around the respect for the constitution, and increasing restrictions on democratic space.
He told the UN Security Council that in the absence of dialogue, there is a real risk that political actors could resort to unilateral decisions that may compound existing political tensions.
What is at stake here, basically, is the long-term stability of the DRC.
Fears are high in the country that President Joseph Kabila, who is due to step down at the end of the year, will delay elections so that he can continue in power. A constitutional court ruling in May said the president and parliament members could remain in office until new office holders assume their duties. The UN has more than 18,000 soldiers and police in the DRC and has been making contingency plans. But Eliasson warned that if there is a major political and security crisis, the UN could not be expected to substitute for the government. Congo's UN ambassador, Ignace Gatamavita, denied that political space is shrinking in his country and said the government wants to conduct free elections in line with all international standards in a peaceful atmosphere. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The World Health Organization is leading a mass yellow fever vaccination campaign in Central Africa to prevent the national and international spread of this deadly disease. The campaign, which begins this month, aims to vaccinate 15.5 million people in Angola and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Lisa Schlein reports from the WHO headquarters in Geneva.
A yellow fever outbreak began late last year in the Angolan capital, Luanda, and spread quickly throughout the country. The disease also spread to neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. The two-month vaccination campaign is being held in advance of the next rainy season in September, when mosquitoes come out and transmission goes up. Bruce Aylward is WHO Executive Director of Outbreaks and Health Emergencies. He says this outbreak is particularly dangerous because it is occurring in large cities. He says massive outbreaks of yellow fever can occur in urban settings because mosquitoes can rapidly infect thousands of people.
And with that explosive spread, number of cases, you can see very high mortality rates. These can be very dangerous, destabilizing events. But the other concern is when urban outbreaks take off in these areas, there's a risk then of international spread of this virus.
Aylward says two cases were reported in Kenya and 11 cases were brought to China by Chinese men who had been working in Angola. Yellow fever is endemic in 47 countries, 33 of them in Africa. Most of the rest are in South America. Yellow fever is an acute viral disease that, in the worst cases, can cause liver damage that begins to turn the skin yellow. The mosquito that transmits the virus is the Aedes aegypti, the same one that transmits the Zika virus. Since the mosquito also exists in Asia, Aylward warns the potential for creating an international crisis exists. Aylward, however, tells VOA the prognosis for containing the geographical spread is good.
This is not like Ebola or not like Zika, for which we don't have a vaccine, of course. This is a disease for which we have vaccine and for which there is a vaccination requirement under the international health regulations for yellow fever. So again, a big part of our work with the countries at risk of the disease is to ensure that they have a vaccination of traveler policy.
Latest WHO figures show more than 3,500 suspected and over 860 confirmed cases of yellow fever in Angola, with 355 deaths. In DRC, there are over 1,300 suspected and 68 confirmed cases, with 75 deaths. The cost of the mass yellow fever campaign is expected to be $34 million. Aylward says the WHO will launch an appeal for $20 million in the coming days, with Angola and DRC covering the rest. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The leader of the opposition Zambians for Empowerment and Development Party has endorsed incumbent President Edgar Lungu from the ruling Patriotic Front Party for the August 11th presidential election. In an interview with VOA, Fred Mutesa says President Lungu is the best among all of the presidential candidates with the ability to unite the country and improve the living conditions of Zambians. But some opposition party supporters have expressed disappointment at the endorsement by the leader of the ZED. They said it appears to be fraught with efforts to appease Lungu and his PF party in exchange for jobs in the administration if he wins the presidential vote. Mutesa tells reporter Peter Cloti this follows careful deliberation and scrutiny of the presidential candidates who will be in this year's general poll.
Well, in our view, out of all the presidential candidates in next month's elections, we believe President Lungu is the one who has shown most promise and hope for our nation. He's a man with a good sense of judgment, which can be evidenced in many decisions he has taken since he got into office last year. For example, his choice of vice president, chief justice, central bank governor, attorney general, inspector general of police, to mention just a few, demonstrate that the president got a good eye for competency as well as sensitivity to Zambia's diversity, which can only add to strengthening national unity. Bear in mind also that this is a man that has only had one budget to work with, but within this short period of time, he has demonstrated commitment to fostering development across the country without discrimination as to whether people voted for him or didn't.
Some opposition political parties are expressing their disappointment in you and your party's decision to endorse President Lungu because they said that PF supporters allegedly have been attacking other opposition groups and police have favored them against other opposition groups, and that your endorsement basically is for you and some of the people you choose to have positions if President Lungu wins. What is your reaction to that?
Well, it is to be expected that the opposition would not welcome our endorsement of the incumbent precisely because they think it's taking away votes from their parties. So I don't think it's surprising in that sense. In my view, the issue of violence is mainly between two leading political parties, the ruling Patriotic Front and the leading opposition political party, the United Party for National Development. And the president acknowledged that there are problems within his own party as far as violence is concerned, and we have seen him move in a manner that is unbiased. Right now, as we speak, the police are arresting both opposition party members that are perpetrating violence, as well as members of the ruling Patriotic Front. So in that sense, I think the president is being fair and being very objective.
Is your party considering an alliance with the PEF or the Patriotic Front ahead of the election, looking at the fact that you just endorsed the president to seek re-election?
Well, our system really does not provide for coalition government, but we are definitely putting our money where our mouth is. We hope that the Patriotic Front can win next month's election because we believe out of principle they present the best opportunity for national unity, for peace and prosperity in an equitable manner. So whether it's the alliance or not, we haven't entered into those kind of talks with the ruling party, but we are available to support because we believe that the destiny of our nation is at stake and we need the best team to govern the country.
Does that mean that you will be campaigning, your party will be campaigning for there are other candidates, including the parliamentary candidates, city councillors, and other candidates of the Patriotic Front Party?
The statement I made to the media this morning pointed out very categorically that we are supporting President Edgar Lungu as candidature. We didn't talk about other candidates at other levels of the electoral process.
Fred Mutesa is the leader of the Opposition Zambians for Empowerment and Development, Z Party. He spoke with reporter Peter Cloti from the capital, Lusaka. The Nigerian tech startup Andela has set out to find the best technology talent across Africa, train them, and put them to work on projects for some of the world's biggest companies. That mission got a boost last month when Andela was chosen as the first investment by Facebook co-founder Mark Zuckerberg's newly launched fund. An analyst says the investment is a show of support for tech startups that make education a priority. Chris Stein has more from Lagos.
Andela's three-story Lagos headquarters may not look like much, but it houses one of the most selective workforces in Africa, working on projects for tech giants like IBM and Microsoft. It might soon need new office space. The company just raised $24 million, with one of its biggest investments coming from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, started by the Facebook co-founder and his wife, Priscilla Chan. Andela's director of operations, Sheni Suleiman, says the company hopes to channel the money into expanding its recruiting process, finding more clients, and potentially opening up in a third African country after Nigeria and Kenya.
It seems like a lot of money, but there's so many things we want to do that I'm sure we'll figure out ways to spend it.
Andela hires aspiring software developers for a four-year program where they learn programming languages and skills and then work remotely for tech companies from their offices in Lagos or Nairobi. The company is highly selective and gets anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 applications for hiring cycles every 3 months. They usually take on only 12 new people each time.
Our goal is to basically train 100,000 software developers who are world-class in Africa over the next 10 years.
With the experience they get from Mandela, Suleiman says he expects many developers to go off and make their own mark on Africa's tech scene.
Each of them has a pain point that is real, that they felt at some point in their lives, that they want to go address once they're done with all this experience. And I think that is the kind of passion and the kind of force that will change this continent.
The company's concept picked Zuckerberg and Chan's interest. The couple started the initiative last year after the birth of their first child with the goal of advancing human potential and promoting equality. $24 million isn't an uncommon figure in Africa's tech startup scene today. Africa Internet Group, which runs leading Africa e-commerce website Jumia, took in nearly $300 million in funding this year. Movie streaming website Oroko TV also received $19 million to expand its operations across Africa this year. But while those companies are focused on commerce and entertainment, Bankole Oluwafemi, editor of technology news website Tech Cabal, says Andela's emphasis on education makes it stand out among Africa's rising tech stars.
Andela has kind of like attacked that problem, and they're kind of like unique in that they're one of the first, if not the first, to attack that problem at scale, the problem of education.
The Chan Zuckerberg Initiative recognized that. In a statement, it cited Andela's innovative model of learning as one of the reasons they decided to invest in the company. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here's Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Jackson. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with cycling. Eritrean cyclist Mekeseb Debesay won the fourth stage of the Tour of Oran, finishing at the Col of St. Cruz on the summit of Oran, some 432 kilometers west of the Algerian capital, Algiers. Meanwhile, Egypt are the only Africans to win a match at the World Women's Under-20 Handball Championships when they beat Kazakhstan 35-29 on Thursday in Moscow, Russia. Turkey edged Angola 56-52. Tunisia play Austria, and Angola face Montenegro tomorrow, Saturday. In athletics, Blessing Okagbare Igote-Gwenor clocked a season best of 11.02 seconds to triumph in a women's Olympic 100-meter qualifier at the Confederation of African Athletics World Relay in her hometown, Sapele, in south-south Nigeria on Thursday. Antwi ran 13.27 seconds to win the 110-meter hurdles for men in a Nigerian record, while Ogono Ogene and Divine Odeduru ran an identical 10.23 seconds in their 100-meter heats. In rugby, Kenya play Zimbabwe in a 15-a-side rugby test match in the Africa Division 1 test match in Kampala tomorrow, Saturday. In football, Egypt play Angola today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Burkina Faso face Mali. Gambia engage Guinea as Senegal and Ghana face off in the Under-17 African Championship qualifiers. On Sunday, Lesotho engage South Africa. Cameroon play Liberia. Sudan play Nigeria. While Nigeria women play South Africa in a women's friendly international match in Chicago, Illinois State in the United States of America. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark, and have a good day. And that's it for this Friday, July 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again next week for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporter Peter Cloti, as well as sports editor Mark Owuma, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Next on Let's Talk. Football, also known as soccer, the most popular sport around the world. Are you a big fan? Do you have a favorite team? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing football or soccer. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's talk. comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Thank you.